Hello, welcome to the show. Hello, welcome to the show. Hello, welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
You're listening to Chinese reggae music here on the first edition of Shlonkum Bakaze's podcast. I call it the Iraq cast, and that's the sound of a drive in your ear. So yeah, I figured that I could spend some time lying on the couch here reading my foreign policy magazine, and I don't know, it might not be mine, I actually stole it from somebody. Anyway, don't steal, it's very bad. So I'm just going to be doing sort of a casual first podcast, and maybe playing some music for you as, you know, time allows me, or the moment allows me to feel like I should play music. So, yes,
let me open up the magazine and flip through it and see if I can find anything that's interesting. There's a really good article actually about, it's called Inside the Committee That Runs the World. All the links, by the way, will be on the blog, so you can check out the actual articles. Let me see, where is it? So yeah, I hope it's not too boring for you. I'm just gonna flip through here. And so there was a quote here that Brent Scowcroft, I think he said quite well about how the current, I mean, it's there's a difference between the way that certain people inside of this administration in the U.S. is handling foreign policy issues, and there's basically two schools. It's the new neocon sort of ideal. Well, it's not ideal, but it seems a bit idealistic to me. And then the particularly the older branch of internationalism, even at the level of George Bush Senior under Scowcroft. Anyway, let me find this quote here. Okay, here it is. Let's see here. So yeah, while I look for the quote, I'm gonna talk. So check this out. Just hold on a second. Okay. Well, I don't care if this is boring for you, because this is just my first one. Okay. Those who know the president will suggest that George W. Bush's decisiveness might be attributed in part to a higher power. Scowcroft was quoted late last year as saying, "It's impossible that the transformation came with 9/11. And the current president, who is a very religious person, thought that there was something unique, if not divine, about a catastrophe like 9/11 happening when he was president. That somehow that was meant to be, and his mission is to deal with the war on terrorism. But as Scowcroft also notes, the problem with absolutist beliefs is that they can get you into traps in which the ends justify the means. It can be dangerous to believe that one's motives are so noble that therefore anything we do becomes okay because we're doing it for a good cause." End quote. The paradoxical implication is clear. From undercutting traditional relationships with allies to Abu Ghraib, the less moral ambiguity you have in your worldview, the more of it you can justify in your actions. Another problem with this approach, according to Scowcroft, comes from the fact that, quote, "if you believe you are pursuing absolute good, then it is a sin to depart from it," end quote. Which means that absolutism either creates dangerous policy handcuffs, or alternatively, it leaves the United States open to charges of hypocrisy. Sounds familiar. Quote, "for example," Scowcroft observes, "we advocate the export of democracy, and yet we find ourselves embracing a number of leaders who are anything but democratic in order to advance other policies or even the spread of democracy elsewhere. You cannot argue for absolutes and then practice pragmatism without opening yourself up to criticism." Okay, now that's pretty clear, I think. And so I agree with Brent Scowcroft, to say the least. It's so funny that we're so jaded, and we can't just put him in such simple terms as he does in this article. Let's see. Yeah, so there's some other quotes here, but I didn't even mark them. I'm just like flipping through the magazine. There's this really funny table of Henry Kissinger and these heads, well, literal and figurative heads of foreign policy. you have to see it. Just click on the link. So, yeah, I should probably have marked something, but that's okay. I just sort of wanted to wing it. Maybe I can just bring it up later. You know, let me put on another song. Actually, this is such a great song. It's the Lebanese national anthem, and I don't think anybody claims any ownership onto it, so I can play it for you here, and then I can look for the quotes while it's playing. And if I wasn't laying on the couch, I could set up the mic. But let me see here. Let me sort of put this around. And hold on. Situated and propped up, maybe. Okay, how's, let's see how this is. Okay, so kullana lil watan lilala lil alam. Ready? Here you go. So that's the Lebanese national anthem, and I didn't really find what I was looking for, so you'll have to excuse me. Anyway, I want to sort of wrap this up because I'm curious to see how big this file would be, and then I can sort of pick up where I left off maybe tomorrow or later, if I feel like it. I want to mention, I'm gonna have some links to this Joseph Jaffe. I don't know how to pronounce his name. I think I had something on my blog about a year ago that was sort of like some I think series that UC Berkeley does with and it was, he was being interviewed about the Iraq War and stuff, and so this is he wrote an article called A World Without Israel, in last edition of Foreign Policy, and now in this edition, the latest edition, there's about four or five responses to that article, and they're pretty interesting. One of them is by Juan Cole, who is a professor of history at University of Michigan. And you have one, it's sort of balanced in a way. You have one by Fouad Ajami, who's some Lebanese dude at Johns Hopkins. And you have some even Jewish voices. And then Jaffe comes back with his sort of counter response. So, yeah, I'll just like wrap this up and take you out with some oud, and then yeah, I'll get to other things later maybe. All right, bye bye. This is Shlonkem Bakaze Acha. Thank you.